Hello and welcome back to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Brandon. Today we continue our Newsworthy Clips article. It is May 15th, and we thank you for joining us. And back in the studio, I have two panelists. First, welcome Josh.
Thank you, Brandon. It's very good to be back here talking about our Newsworthy Clips.
Right. And what did we talk about yesterday?
Well, yesterday we talked about Amazon bringing a new service to its customers, allowing them to install some equipment that would provide the opportunity for delivery drivers to have the doors unlocked remotely or away from home so that they could put their packages right inside the door.
All right. And there are pros and cons to this, depending on maybe where you live and your take on it. Welcome back, Pauline.
Hi. Glad to be here.
We're talking about pros and cons of yesterday's article, the Amazon Key. What are some of the pros?
Well, the pros are the convenience of not having to worry about your package being outside or if you're not there when they go to deliver it, you don't have to worry about, you know, going somewhere else to pick it up at a package delivery center
right.
or something. So, you know, those are some big pros. And I'm assuming you're going to ask me some cons.
Sure.
So I'm just going to go
that for it.
Too.
Yeah.
Some cons might be, we talked about if you have pets, this might not be the best solution.
Yeah.
If you're in an apartment with a gated, public gate you have to go through, you may not be able to use this service. There's different situations where it may not be right for you, or you might just be uncomfortable with the idea of a stranger going into your house.
Right. Or if you have an alarm, you have to be careful that they don't trip that alarm when they go in. You have to be able to turn that off for a certain amount of time. So there are some things to think about there, and we'll have to see if this becomes a trend for other companies to kind of implement that into how they deliver packages as well. Today, we talk about something totally different. We're talking about the Great Barrier Reef. And it's an interesting question. I've never thought about this. We're asking, how much is it worth?
Yeah, this creates a really interesting philosophical question about whether or not you can put a price tag on nature and whether or not that's a beneficial thing to think about.
Yeah, it's not something I've thought about in such specific terms, like actually putting a real price tag on it. And why would you want to do that, Josh?
Well, that is a very good question, and I think that's what we'll be talking about today. But some people would argue that without a monetary or a financial value being placed on natural resources that are not consumed directly, like, say, petroleum, gas, oil, even water or air, that it opens it up for sort of an unlimited exploitation without really examining the cost of exploiting or even destroying those resources.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think we talk so often, or we hear debates about conservation, and a lot of it, you know, the other side maybe of conservation is how much money are you costing communities in the different businesses or resources that they could get out of areas. So it's kind of the other side, right? There's money to be had or to be saved or to be gained on both sides.
Right.
But frequently, up until this point, the money piece has always been on more of the side of using the resources, not conserving them.
Right. Very good points there. Well, let's look at page 25 and listen to today's first reading as we dig into this topic.
How much is the Great Barrier Reef worth? As mankind puts the world's largest living structure at risk, economists have come up with a new solution. Put a price tag on it. Australia's Great Barrier Reef is bigger than Japan, visible from space, and one of the most complex ecosystems on Earth. But it's also under siege from climate change, agricultural runoff, coastal development, and illegal fishing. Debate over its use is often polarized between strict protection and open development. Champions of the former assign infinite value and the latter very little. That's partly why the Great Barrier Reef Foundation asked Deloitte Access Economics to value the icon. It came up with a value of 56 billion Australian dollars, 43 billion US dollars, based on an asset supporting tens of thousands of jobs and which contributes 6.4 billion Australian dollars to the economy.
So we learn here that the Great Barrier Reef is the world's largest living structure, and Pauline, it is at risk.
Yeah, it's in danger of not being a living structure anymore. I think we've talked about this on Advanced Radio before. The coral reef is experiencing bleaching, and there's just a lot of different factors involved in its becoming an endangered natural resource.
But there is a solution. Economists have come up with a solution. That's kind of interesting. I wouldn't normally think about economists when it comes to the Great Barrier Reef.
We should probably say what economists are. Economists are people who study money, basically, but how money is being used in the world between businesses and in governments, and it's just the financial studies, I guess. So yeah, you don't usually think of finances when you're thinking about science and particularly about conservation.
Right. And so they have put a price tag on the Great Barrier Reef. And of course, this is in Australia. And it is bigger than Japan. And Josh, you can actually see it from space, apparently.
Right. So there are not that many structures that are visible from space, but this is a living structure that you can see from the space station as it passes over.
All right. And it's one of the most complex ecosystems on Earth. Pauline, what is an ecosystem?
An ecosystem is an area where living things exist, and usually we would refer to an ecosystem as an area where that's the only place or environment that certain types of animals, plants, living things will be able to survive and thrive.
Right. And so this, the Great Barrier Reef, is one of the most complex ecosystems on Earth. But it is under siege, and that is a good phrase to know. It's like it's in a war or something, Josh.
Yeah, so when you are under siege, that means that you are in your area of safety, be it in the old days like a fortress or a castle, and you have enemies at the gate or outside who have basically are attacking you and not really allowing you to get things that you need to survive, be it trade or money or food or water.
So that's a great, visual of what is happening to this really important, huge ecosystem, the Great Barrier Reef. It is being attacked from all sides, from many different things we see here. It's being attacked by climate change. We've talked about that with the coral bleaching, that the change of temperature in the water is affecting negatively the coral and the life there. There's also agricultural runoff. So in the land nearby, I would assume Australia, you have farmers who are maybe using chemicals to protect their plants and fertilizers and all these things. But then when you get hard rains, that gets washed down into the streams that goes into the ocean, and that starts to affect your ecosystem in the ocean. Then there's also coastal development. So there's buildings that are built on the coast and illegal fishing. So then there's the actual animals that are living in that ecosystem being taken by fishing illegally. So there's just so many different ways that this beautiful place, this really important ecosystem, is under attack.
That's right. Very good explanation. And so all of these things are combining, and it is not good news for the Great Barrier Reef. And there's a debate, though, in many situations in today's world. We must debate things. And so what is this debate about, Josh?
Well, this debate, I think, is a debate that is mirrored or is very similar to other situations when people are talking about conserving natural resources that aren't being used for or consumed, right? So this debate is polarized. Or when you polarize something, usually you give two sort of different extremes that people tend to identified with.
Yeah, right? You have a pole. You have two ends, right?
Yeah,
some
exactly.
People are on one end, and the others on the other end.
Right. So, like, there, there's the north and the south pole to the Earth, mm-hmm. right? Magnets have two different poles and two different ends, and it when something is polarized, it tends to draw people to both of those different ends. And mm-hmm. here in this debate, one of those ends is that people who champion or who say that these resources should be protected. Often say that it is of infinite value, that mm-hmm. you can't put a dollar amount mm-hmm. on these things because they are so valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas people who are on the other end for open development, they say that what they're saying is that the natural resource themselves doesn't have sort of a monetary value.
Mm-hmm.
And what really does have the value is the development that you can get out of it in order to bring industry, economy, jobs, those sort of resources that are a part of the natural resource.
Right. So one camp is saying we must protect it at all costs, basically. And then the others are saying we need to use these resources. And this is often the debate we see when it comes to nature and climate change and so forth. Well, they give more of a description here, and they refer to, they first say champions of the former assign infinite value and the latter very little. And I always find that phrase, the former and latter, to be very useful. Of course, former talking about the first thing you mentioned and latter talking about the last thing you mentioned. And they say the champions of the former assign infinite value. So those who are for strict protection, they're saying this reef is worth a lot. And those who are for open development, they're saying, well, it's not really worth as much to us. We want to use the resources.
Right. And so that's why this Greater Barrier Reef Foundation decided to take an economic a look at this resource. Mm. They asked this company to value the icon. So an icon is something that we see as like very famous or representative of a place or a way of being. So whenever I think of Australia, I think of the Great Barrier Reef. It's an icon.
Yeah.
But we don't usually think of it in terms of how much money is it worth.
Right.
And that's what this conservation group asked the Economist to do.
We also use that word icon maybe when it comes to someone who's famous, maybe in the movie industry, they're an icon of entertainment or something like that. Well, it came up with a value. So they put that price tag on it, and we first get that value in Australian dollars. How much is it worth, according to the Economist, Josh?
Well, here they say that they came up with a value of 56 billion Australian dollars,
mm-hmm.
which is about 43 billion in U.S. dollars. And this is based on an asset supporting tens of thousands of jobs, which contributes a 6.4 billion in dollars to the economy. So here this is kind of answering how people who are interested in development really kind of answer sort of the intrinsic value or worth of something is that it's not the place or it's not the nature that's worth something, but it's the jobs that it provides. It's the development that it provides. It really gives a value. And here what the economists have done is they're saying, okay, so let's take a look at this natural wonder and value it as an asset or something that drives an economy, that drives jobs, that drives an industry. And let's put a value on that thing so that anything that might harm or be a detriment to this asset, which is driving all of these things in the economy, can really then have a monetary value of how much damage it's causing.
And that makes sense to me. The Great Barrier Reef has been a place I've always dreamed of going to. But then as I hear that it's, you know, that there's all these problems that it's dying off, I wonder, like, should I go? Is it worth going to anymore? So in a very small sense, then I am money for Australia that may or may
right.
not get. Like if they lose the Great Barrier Reef, then I won't go and stay in hotels.
Right.
I won't pay a tour guide. I won't pay the flight. It's all this money that would go to Australia and to
mm-hmm.
all these different job sectors
right.
when I'm really the whole reason I'm going is for the Great Barrier Reef, right? And if you lose that, you do lose all of these tourists who aren't just paying for a tour and not just paying for snorkeling or scuba diving, but they're paying for restaurants and for hotels and just so many things along the way.
And so this sort of ecosystem can provide jobs. Tourists come to see this. And just like Pauline said, if she decides not to go, well, then that's money lost. And so that's factored in here to, you know, how much it's worth. But a coral ecosystem can provide lots of things, can provide a source of food. It can protect coastlines from storms and erosion. And, of course, it provides a habitat for fish. And as we talked about, it provides jobs for locals and so forth when it comes to tourism. And so it really does provide a lot, and we don't often think about that. We may sometimes think, well, we want these resources. We want to use them in our lives or for ourselves, but we can do that at a cost. It can cost people and cost us as well in the long run. And so it is based on an asset supporting tens of thousands of jobs and which contributes to $6.4 billion Australian dollars to the economy. And so lots of money is coming in from tourists and so forth. Well, next we're going to learn more about valuing nature in monetary terms. So let's learn about that in our next reading.
Valuing nature in monetary terms can effectively inform policy settings and help industry, government, the scientific community, and the wider public understand the contribution of the environment to the economy and society, the Deloitte report said. The tight and unforgiving deadline the Great Barrier Reef is up against necessitates an understanding of its true value to know what kind of policy action is required in response. The urgency to deal with its threats is only accelerating.
So here we learn more about why they want to put a price tag on it. What is the benefit of doing that, Josh?
Well, here they say that valuing nature in monetary terms or in terms of money can effectively inform policy settings and help industry, government, and scientific community and the wider public understand the contribution of the environment to both the economy and society. So here what they're kind of saying is that by giving it the sort of monetary value that they are able to better put into perspective for everyone the way that they set policies and set protections as preserving not just nature, but the value, the monetary value of that natural asset.
Yeah, the reason we keep talking about like the monetary value, we say we're valuing it in terms of of the money, is that there are many ways to value something, right? The value of something isn't just based on how much it is, you know, worth, how much money you can gain from it. Many people who are passionate about conservation aren't passionate about it because of the amount of money that it brings in for the country. They believe that there are other reasons to feel passionate about nature. But this adds a different aspect to the conversation and can maybe draw in people who don't feel quite that same draw to that side of the argument, but really can't do think in terms of money. And they're really passionate about creating jobs and seeing economy do well so that everybody in a community and in a country are, you know, doing better and aren't in poverty. So if you can start to talk to that, then that can maybe bring the conversation to a better centering point.
When you put a price tag on something, people oftentimes will pay more attention. And it's very straightforward. You see that, you know, it's this valuable, so to speak, and people will maybe start to think, oh, well, maybe we should pay more attention to it. As Pauline said, many people are naturally inclined to, you know, be involved with environmental issues, but others aren't. But when they see this price tag, they may begin to see how valuable it really is.
And that's really important right now because there's not a lot of time left to protect the Great Barrier Reef. It says the tight and unforgiving deadline of the Great Barrier Reef is up that we're up against necessitates an understanding of its true value. So it's not something they can spend a lot of time just kind of theorizing about and saying, oh yeah, mm-hmm. isn't it a great thing? They really need something that's going to grab people's attention and make people really be willing to make some strong decisions about it. Otherwise, it might be gone.
Right.
And when we talk about being up against a deadline, what we mean here is that there is something that needs to happen very soon. So deadlines are sort of a very concrete or a finite timeline limit that we have for something. And if we're pushing a deadline, it means that we're getting really close to that time limit. And if we're up against a deadline, it means that it's coming soon.
That's right. And so because this deadline is tight, it's coming soon, it necessitates something. That means there's something necessary that needs to happen.
And it's unforgiving. I like that idea that, you know, they're saying if you miss this deadline, you may not be able to repair the damage that is done, or it might be gone completely. So it's not something that, well, it'd be best if you got it, you know, in time. If you turned in your work by now, that'd be best. But
right.
if you, I think of when I was in school, I had teachers who were like, you know, it's due on this
right.
date, but then if you turn it in the next day, it's 10%
yeah,
off
right.
and the next day. So it wasn't exactly unforgiving. It just, you had a negative consequence
sure.
each time, but this is unforgiving. It's saying there's really no, you know, if you don't fix this in time, there may be no going back to protect any of it.
Right. And they talk about policy action and policy settings. And I think what they're referring to, Josh, is maybe some government policies that can be put into place to protect this, or maybe some other action that can be taken by government bodies.
Yeah, there are probably a few things here that they're talking about. They might be addressing some things like the runoff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also coastal development. So if they set policies that say that, like, in order to keep your business going, you're going to have to make some radical changes or investments in order to address these problems now, as opposed to phasing them in slowly mm-hmm. or giving them some time to deal with it, or even what we call grandfathering, meaning that if you built before a certain time, this new law won't be applicable to you. But if you build after a time, then you have to do new protections. Like if policy means making some radical changes and making it, you know, kind of a big impact on a lot of people, that's kind of what they're saying is necessary in order to protect this economic asset.
Right.
They're saying it's really urgent, right? It has to be done soon, and there needs to be a radical response, because the urgency to deal with its threats is only accelerating. You're getting closer and closer to that deadline, so the need to do something is becoming greater and greater.
Right. Good point. Well, we have a little more to discover before we end today's topic. Let's go to our last reading for today.
To gauge the risks, scientists have been exposing coral communities to future ocean temperatures and carbon dioxide levels over long periods. The results show how the precious services to the ecosystem that reefs provide will change as the oceans get warmer and acidify. And that's a direct threat to the region's economy. But the need to protect the icon goes beyond dollars and cents. The Great Barrier Reef's traditional indigenous owners have a connection spanning 60,000 years, and its ecological and environmental functions are deeply embedded in their culture, the report says. Such values just aren't suited to quantification, it said.
So scientists have been doing something that's quite interesting. They've been exposing coral communities to future ocean temperatures, and they're doing this in order to gauge the risks, Josh.
Yeah, so when you gauge the risks of something, you are measuring the risk of something, right? So when you look at a gauge as sort of a measure or representation of what's going on, and here scientists have been exposing coral communities to future ocean temperatures, so what they predict the warmth of the water will be in the future, and carbon dioxide levels over long periods, and sort of, I'm assuming, a controlled experiment to see what will happen to the coral, and that the results of those experiments show how the precious services to the ecosystems that we provide will change as the oceans get warmer and acidify. And I think the assumption here is that the change will be negative.
That's right. And that word acidify is talking about when something becomes an acid or turns something into an acid. And of course, that is really bad news. And we're talking about coral reefs and we're talking about nature. And this affects the whole ecosystem.
Yeah, I think this paragraph is just going back to saying, you know, there are scientific reasons for believing that we are getting closer and closer to a crisis point with this reef. They've done these studies to show that if it continues in this direction, it will drastically affect the ecosystem there. And that will then have a direct result on the region's economy. So it's putting those two things together. We know we have an environmental problem that's urgent, that is accelerating, that we're coming very close to a crisis point with. And now we've put a value on how much that is worth. So we know that if that crisis point happens, it won't just be a huge loss for our world in terms of just a natural resource for beauty and for animal and plant life. We're also talking about a huge economic loss.
That's right. But it's not just about money, right? We learn next that it's the need to protect the icon. It goes beyond the dollars. It goes beyond the money factor. And we talk about the traditional aspect, right, of the people living there, Josh.
Yeah, so it's trying to explain that while we understand now that as an economic asset, it has a certain dollar value, but there are also other aspects that are not included in this sort of assessment or this dollar value that really are invaluable.
All right, and also talks about ecological and environmental functions are deeply embedded in the culture there, the people who live there. You know, it's part of them, really. It's part of their culture, and you can't really put a price tag on that.
Right, even if you don't lose any money, if your job stays completely secure, but you lose this beautiful resource in your area or in the world, there's still a great deal of sadness. It's still a huge loss.
So they say in the end here, such values just aren't suited to quantification. You can't put a price tag on it. You can't measure the value of this because it's so incredibly valuable to the people who live there. Well, thank you for joining us today for day two of our Newsworthy Clips article. Please come back tomorrow as we finish up. Until then, this is Brandon.
I'm Pauline.
And Josh.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.